peanuts for one price in those days like that. So I said, all right, you follow me. Come on, let's go to the peanuts. I think she was a bit deaf too, deaf and dumb. So we got the peanuts, we divided. So she was happy, I was happy, Pat is happy. So then, now the question of what to get for Baba. I've gotten something for each of them now for Baba. That's the biggest thing. For days, while I was going to school, I was always looking around at these hand carts. We used to have a hand cart because there was not much traffic. People would sell things in hand carts. No, nothing worked. One day, I was startled to see a hand cart with glazed pottery. Different things, different animals, shapes, dolls, this. And there between all this, I saw a pair of ducks, beautiful golden yellow ducks. You know, that it was new at that time, the shining porcelain, you know. And there was this big flat beak and holes in the head, you see, either for salt or pepper. Mm-hmm. And I said, ah, that's for Baba. Now, I was short of one pipe. I said, how much? And they said that. I said, but I haven't got that much. I must have these ducks. But there's one paisa short. No, sorry. One paisa is my pocket. You don't give me one paisa. Then what's left? Go. I said, please, man. No. Bacha, you go away from here. I said, but please. I must have this. Ah, you bring your paisa, then I will have. But only one paisa. Don't be so mean. Only one paisa. But one paisa is my pocket. No, please. And I said, oh, but he started moving. I almost wanted to cling on to that hand. But what do you do? Suddenly I got an idea. I said, look, wait. You come with me. My home is not far. You come with me home, and I'll go get home inside my house, and I'll bring you my paisa. Please don't go. When I said that come with me, I'll get it from home, he looked at me, and then he said, all right, take. He didn't come home. He let that paisa go. So he had a share also in that gift for Baba. Mm-hmm. I took those ducks, and I put them in my battered little box. And every morning when I'd go to school, I'd open to see if they were still there, those two ducks with the holes in their heads. Every evening I'd come back. First thing I'd go and open. My mother was so disgusted. I mean, what? You know, and I'd look at the thing. At last, the time came. I carried those ducks and all the other presents. Baba and the women were in what was known in Lower Mehrabad in the building known as bathroom. Because it was the military barracks, the camp. Yeah, military barracks. So there was the post office, there was the bathrooms, the one building known as the bathroom, there were the water tanks and all that sort of thing. So I gave it to the others and I kept it for Baba. As soon as I'd go, I'd go straight to Baba and I'd get a lot of loving and hugging and then I gave this to Baba. Would you believe it? Baba looked so happy. Ah, he beamed. And he gave me the impression as if that's the one thing he was waiting for. He had the universe and the world and all that. But what he'd been waiting all these years for was a pair of ducks with a hose. And I said to myself, thank God I saw those ducks. So much to bother. I didn't realize till years later that it's what I put in it. Every day when I was looking at them and saying, this is for Baba. You know, so anyway, he made such a big thing out of it. There was a message to Mera, and Mera and Naja were told that when his food tray came, it was never to come without a pair of ducks. It always had to be in there for salt and pepper. And the more he did all that, the more I said to myself, my God, supposing I'd missed those ducks, that's the one thing Baba wanted. Those yellow ducks, shiny yellow ducks with a hole in the head. Never had that before. He had a world of two and a universe and God knows what and creation. But Baba would do that, you see. That's only an example. Baba has not only done that with me. When something has been given by or done for him by anyone with real love, with a wholeness of heart, with a completeness of intent, Baba would make such a big thing out of it. Because that really reaches Baba. And I've seen that again and again in latter years when I myself was living with Baba right here, day and night, in the ashram with him. And I've seen that. And I'd always think back of the ducks. And I say, yeah, it's what she has put in. I know a woman made a little curry for him one day. Curry, just cooked some curry. And she brought it. Now, that woman has been helped by Baba, tremendously helped. Through his other lovers, financially helped, and in every way helped. So really, she was tremendously grateful to Baba, apart from anything else. But anyway, she brings this little curry. Baba makes a big issue out of it. Curry? Kind of curry I like? What time did you get up? Now she's blushing. 5 o'clock, Baba. 5 o'clock you got up to make the curry? Who ground the masala? I did, Baba. Mara, you hear that? 5 o'clock she got it. Now I am seeing all this. And I can't take it. Tell myself, my God, so what's the little curry at 5 o'clock? So what? I mean, what Baba has done for this, I know, because I was in on the thing, you see. I had to help with this. With Baba helping her. So, I mean, what Baba's done for her, and this little curry, and then it dawned on me. Back came those ducks. I said, no, it's not the curry. It's what she's put in it. It's not the spices, not the condiments. But it's the something deep. That real love that, oh, I wish I could make curry for Baba. Oh, I hope Baba will like it. Probably tasting it a number of times. Making it really had put so much of a heart in it. And so, in the same way when Baba would, when somebody would sing for Baba, oh boy, and we had to listen. we have known somebody say in a crowd, in a group, Baba, I've composed a song specially for you, Baba. And I made a tune and everything, Baba. Can I sing for you, Baba? Really? Yes, sing. And so we would all say, oh, wonderful. But, and then when the singing would start, the person neither had voice, nor tone, nor ear. And, you know, it would be like a ship that was listing, you know. And Baba would sit there and say, is that good? And I said to myself, because there was an occasion when there was a singer, a professional singer who really wasn't as hot as everybody thought she was, and she was singing up there under the tin shed where we are in Mehrabad, Upper Mehrabad, and mother was there. Now, mother was privileged to say things to her, to Baba as her son, which we couldn't. So sometimes Baba's mandali, men or women, would get things to Baba through mother, you know. So, but mother was also very shrewd of her own. Often the remarks would be from her own self. So here was this lady singing under the shed there in Upper Mehrabad. You know, Baba saying, good. And mother, with a very sweet smile, says in Irani, for heaven's sake, Mara, stop doing that, because this lady isn't going to stop singing if you go on raising her up a pedestal and saying how good she is. And everybody's sick, you know. So let's have enough of that. But with a very sweet smile in Irani, you see. And Baba played the game and smiling back and said, yes, isn't it good? Yes, you're right. And then turning to the lady and said, well, just one more now, we'll have it. So, to get back to the point of...
You started on this line by telling us the story of the duck.
But how Baba would...
Only Baba knows
what's behind it. Yeah. About that singing, like when Baba would do. There was a time when Baba Lata sent poetry in post. He wasn't even here. So that you want to do it to show it to him. No, he wasn't even here. But pages and pages and pages of poetry, which he'd written in 1 hour. I mean, do you write good poetry in an hour? But it was all about Baba. It was all about Baba, you see. And so Baba had Erich reading. Here's Erich sitting, and I've come with some photos, and I'm listening. And I said, what's that to myself? And it seemed this was that poetry. But he was inspired to write in an hour, you know. And it sounded junk to me. And Baba said, very nice. Right. And I said to myself, my God, what's Baba doing? He's having Eris write that is very good. So, of course, what the man will do immediately, what the lover will do, is have it printed, and probably with the preface saying Baba heard it and said it was very good, or maybe not only approved, Baba ordered me to write, who knows? They do all that kind of thing. And this gentleman will go around him, and what impression will they have of Baba's divinity? Look, this is not poetry, in short. And all this is in my mind, of course. All this is. And very soon afterwards, I realized, I said, oh, Baba overlooks so many faults of his lovers. He overlooks. And then the thought came to me very clearly. He says, no, he doesn't overlook. He looks through it. What we see is the surface. We see the faults and the bubbles and the surface. But he sees through it. So he sees the heart. He sees the love that has been put in this poem. How did he know? I certainly didn't. All I heard was the surface and it didn't sound right at all in my ears. But Baba saw to the heart. Still, it wasn't easy next time when that lady sang again. It wasn't. I said, oh, this has come with more songs. Because I'm very sensitive ear. Although I'm hard of hearing. Well, the music or tone or thing is like that.
Oh, there were a few too many bad songs. So you got started getting hard of hearing because there was a few too many bad songs.
Yeah.
You had to listen to.
Yeah, that's probably why. But you see, look how it is. Although the Zoroastrian community, rather the Irani community, it's Zoroastrian because in Bombay it was also the Parsis who were Harrison Mother. Although they couldn't accept Baba, divinity, godhood, because they had seen him fly kites, they had seen him play marbles, they had seen him go to school, they had seen him play to school, they had seen him play impromptu cricket in our alley. In fact, my grandmother's house was full of circles, you know, where the ball would go into the gutter and then from the gutter it would go bang on the thing. It had a modern psychedelic pattern. My grandmother's wall, where the wet ball would strike, you see, from the cricket, round down. But his own family, his uncles, aunts, cousins, but even the older ones, my father's brother, who was even older than my father, they had seen him fly kites, they had seen him play cricket. They'd probably seen Mother thank him at times, but how could they did it? One of my uncles was a director in a film company, a very good film company in Bombay, one of the most well-known imperial company. He was also a partner in a theater company, a traveling Parsi theater. Calcutta was the most well-known and reliable sort of. When you heard Calcutta, you always went to see a play. And yet, even a few days before he died, he said to his wife, Piroja, remember? Marwan is God. And she said, I know. You see that picture of Baba where it says he's both father and mother in one? That picture has been as part of a whole picture where my uncle, this film director uncle, is sitting on the ground next to Baba, holding Baba's hand. And this expression of Baba in that picture with the uncle. I have a full photo of it. And just that one was taken. My mother, my father's brother, much older than my father. My mother couldn't stand that he was so healthy, so much healthier than even my father. Because he could see in the dark. She used to call him Gorba, which means cat. When he'd come home, he could go in the middle of the night, way to the bathroom, way in the back, without a light, without a torch, and he had no glasses. And my mother would say, look at your brother, he's a Gorba, he could see in the dark, you know. But and he was a bit of a tight fist, my uncle, my paternal uncle, the only relative of my father I've seen, I think. So my mother would say, Khodada, what is this? You can't afford to do this, you can't afford to do that, you can't this. How come you're all the time going to Iran and coming here, a few months there, a few months here. Ah, but Shiri, I have to see Merub. I come from Merub. And then he would say, and for money here. He would bring me those pistachios, anything like that. You know, he never used any vehicle where his feet would carry him. I mean, he'd sit in a train, but he'd go to the station walking. And when he got down at Ahmadnagar, he would walk to Mehrabad. Baba would send a tonga. Baba would send Sidhu with the milk carriage, the one tonga, like an ikka. And so to honor Baba's word, my uncle would put his bundle of clothes. He never had a bag. He'd put a bundle of his clothes and the bundle of pistachios on the thing. There's also the orsa, which is made of camel milk cheese they make, one of my favorites. But he would walk beside the tonga. The tonga and the little horse carriage would move along, and my uncle would walk along it. It is to please Padre so much, because he would like somebody who, you know, he never liked delicate darlings, but he's, you know, someone who could be so strong. He had a lot of stories to tell of Khodadad's uncle, and of the Piroja Mami, and the... Even the early Zoroastrian disciples of Baba were harassed to a certain extent. For instance, they would not easily get a job. They could not rent a house. They would say yes. And then the moment they find out, oh, these are Mehr Baba people. No, we haven't got a house. We haven't got this. We haven't. My mother was sort of very elegantly excommunicated by the Irani community. So that without the spoken word, because she used to be one of the belles of the middle-class society, Zoroastrian society in Pune. But after that, although they would send invitations, if she happened to come, then those who were conversing would suddenly stop and whisper, she? Oh, yes. You mean her son? Mm. His mother? Mm. And she was very sensitive, very shrewd. She could, you know, not like me. I'm a bit dumb. It takes me much longer to find out something. My mother would know even intuitively like that. So, but she, as I said, never took things lying down. So one day, Pavlova, the great dancer, had come to Bombay. The great Pavlova? Mm-hmm. And, tickets were 100 rupees in those days. That 100 rupees is like practically 1,000 now. Huh? So the people were coming from all parts from around, like the state, all parts of the state. Now, this opposition group, as I call them, they all decided to go to see Pavlova, but they would not tell Shirin. And of course, they wouldn't take Shirin with them. But Shirin had no connection with them now, so they would not let her know. So there was laughter and joy, and they had these tickets, and they were reserving a special coupe where they would all be in the train together, and they were having a grand time. My mother came to know this. And what she did was, she took a poor friend, a friend who was poor, with her, who always offered her services as companionship for, you know. She took that lady with her, went to Bombay in an earlier train, and got the ticket for herself and this lady, and went into this resplendent big theater and sat in the most central seat where she would be most conspicuous. And then the others came, and when they came, and as they were entering, they saw Shirin alone in that space, because my mother always went hours earlier, if anything, whether it's the station or the theater or... But she especially went early there, and they went in, and they couldn't believe it. And my mother said it was worth 100 rupees just to wash their faces. But apart from that, she said the dance was so lovely. Mother was like Mera. You know, Mera even visibly likes beautiful things, you know. A beauty in any physical form, like it's a flower or a face or a house or a tree. Mera, I bypass that. that for Mara, like to my mother, one day, for instance, as she said, this dance was so beautiful, and so was Pavlova. She played the part of, there was a Krishna Radha dance, and my mother never forgot it. She would describe each little detail. But talking of liking, of appreciating beauty, one day mother was late from the doctor's. And we said, but why are you so late, mother? We were worried. One of my brothers said, we were worried. I didn't know what it was. Oh, she said, you won't believe me. A patient came, an English girl. She came in breeches. But she said she was so beautiful, I just kept looking at her. Our face. So she was late because she couldn't tear herself away from that. Then they wouldn't invite her for the wedding. No, they didn't want not to invite her because they were playing a very subtle and cruel game. So it shouldn't be said that they didn't do it, but so that she should feel all the more that they're inviting me, but I can't go. So they would send wedding invitations to my mother. And my mother was just assured. She knew how to play in a thrust parry. Mm-hmm. And so she wouldn't just decline. She would send me. I was her answer to all wedding invitations. So I had such grand time, you know, eating such delicious meals at so many weddings. Without having the embarrassment of dressing well or being one of the ladies. I was a child. I could do anything, you know. I used to go and play with the goldfish right next to the people who were playing the band with the white and gold epaulettes and everything. It's fun to be at a party wedding if you're a child and nobody's paying much attention to you. Great. They even gave you whiskey soda, even to the children. We'd have it very mild, but and palm at the end of it. And such food. So poor mother never went to the wedding she was invited to, but I had all the answers.
Did Baba ever attend any of those weddings when he was young?
Oh, that's another story. You want to hear?
Sure.
I'll tell you one wedding that Baba attended, which has stayed in my mind forever. But it goes along with another story. When I was 8 years old, and I was spending my holidays month with Baba in Mehrabad, and at that time, all of Baba's mandali, and I was, of course, with the women mandali, they were going to Toka. So I happened to be on the bus when they were moving from Mehrabad to Toka, which is 40 miles from here, I believe. Yeah. So when we got there, the huts were not ready. The huts that were built to accommodate us, the flooring was of carpet. Flooring hasn't yet quite dried. And the huts and the roof thatcher were just ready. They're of that woven bamboo, slit bamboo. And there was there were ladders, you know, workmen were climbing on the ladders, finishing, giving last touches. So we were waiting out there. And always, in front of the women's quarters, there would be an enclosure, a compound, again of that tata, so that we didn't see out, the men didn't see us, but the sky was open, and there was a tree in that enclosure, it so happened, and they could come out when there was not enough room in there to peel the vegetables, to do their things, sit around. So, after we got in there, this I think was the second day, that time it so happened that a Hindu friend of mine came, also, to Mehrabad. Also, it was the first time I remember her being with me. So, and she was the daughter of Sadashiv Patil, the oldest Baba disciple in Pune. Her name was Maina. She was about 2-3 years older than I am. So we were there together, but still, we were not helping in the cooking in the kitchen. I was 8, she was probably 11 or 10. So while everybody was inside there unpacking and doing this and cooking and changing the food, here was Maina and I under this big tree, which was a fruit tree, a sort of a forbidden tree for children because supposed to be, because the fruits are sour, delicious. You can't resist them. I've eaten so many, but it's supposed to be bad for your throat, bad for your lungs, bad for your chest, you know, bronchial. So we were there, Maina and I, around it, and we looked around because we were going to go towards the tree. So we looked around. There was nobody. nobody in that enclosure, except that there was a ladder leaning against one of the huts. The workmen had left it. A bamboo ladder. You know, bamboo the crap. So I looked around. Nobody. Just Minor and myself. As we were going towards the tree, and as I was thinking of bending down to pick up a fruit, we heard a clap. Couldn't believe it, because, you know, we thought there was nobody anywhere. We were startled. We turned around, and there is Baba sitting on the fifth or sixth rung of that bamboo ladder, facing us, sitting so gracefully, so relaxed, like you're sitting on an easy chair, looking so beautiful, this white sadra. You know, it wasn't of this world. And just relaxed like that. And he called us two children and said, come, come. So we ran. I still remember I was at his right side, because from the way I got the embrace, I remember. And here was Maina, my friend, on one side and I on one side. And we were just looking at Baba. First of all, I couldn't believe that when I thought nobody was there, here was Baba. And then just to look at him. So Baba turned to Maina and said, ask for whatever you want. Make a wish, and I'll grant it. Suddenly, like that. And I looked, and I was watching this, and I said, my God, it's just like those in storybooks, the fairy godmother that waves the wand and says, make a wish, and I'll grant it. But this is no fairy godmother. This is God himself. And I just look, and the child hears this, and she says something that's very typical of a typical Hindu girl who will soon be of marriageable age. It's very natural. So she didn't know what to say. She said, oh, Baba, I want a very handsome husband and a very grand wedding. Baba said, give it. And I said, give it. And then he turns to me, ask. And I said, I want to be with you, always. Give it. And then he held me to him, embraced me. And then he said, go. You know, he sent us off. And as I walked a few steps, before I reached the tree, I turned around, he had gone. He had left the ladder and gone. So again, we looked. And hope nobody's there. Especially Baba, because once he gives an order, you're stuck for life. And I didn't want him to say, don't eat tamarind. That would be an order that I didn't want right then. I wasn't ready for it. So we looked here, and we looked there. And even as I picked up, I was wondering if I'd hear a clap. No, there was no. Now I'll tell you, because you asked about Baba attending a wedding. I forgot about it. I forgot about all this incident. Years? About 3 years later, maybe. Maina wedding, marriage was announced. And Sadashiv, her father, said that the marriage would take place only on the condition that Baba attends it. If Baba does not grace the marriage of his only daughter, then that's not marriage. Anyway, Baba accepted. So I, as her honored friend, I will go along with her. They go from in the horse carriage from place to place, like a bridesmaid or something equivalent to that. But I was an honored guest in the house. I stayed there for days in her house. And all the relatives were there, and they were making, helping make all kinds of things in the kitchen, filling these sweets and huge urns that would be given out to the wedding guests. And the wedding, as I remember, was this enormous tent, so colorful, so beautiful, shamiana, as we call it. There was one just for eating and sitting around, one for entertainment, and Baba was there. So at the end of the entertainment, I still remember this, it was filled with people and chairs, and very beautifully done, grand wedding. And there at the end, Baba was on a gadi, and Sadashiv had put a very expensive Kashmiri shawl around Baba. So beautiful that shawl was. And Baba sat there like that with his hair open, and this entertainment was going on. And the entertainment I remember most is a mimic. Okay. I've never before two cats. And Baba was so pleased. He took off. Okay. I've never before or after heard it. Two cats. And Baba was so pleased. He took off the shawl like a toreador, a matador. Like. He took off the shawl like this, and he flung it at the man. It was beautiful to watch, that movement. He said, "I'm so pleased," and the man caught it. So, you see, it went on for 4 days. Grand wedding.
Wow.
And the husband was so handsome that people kept asking, "Where did they find it? Who's that man?" You know, so unusual. So, and but she asked for that, and she got it. But in 1 year's time, it lasted 1 year.
Oh, no.
Yes. She had a little child. The child died. She, I think, during that epidemic of plague, as my mother used to call it, the mother died. That means my friend Maina died. The child died. Now starts a different kind of a pattern. The father of Maina was, of course, heartbroken, but he was so enamored of the son-in-law that he kept him as his son, and he married him to another girl, and you know, like in his own house, like the daughter-in-law was like the daughter now. Then after a time, that original husband died, but by that time he was so attached to the daughter-in-law who was such a help and very nice. It was all nice, you see, people. Mm-hmm. So then he married her off to somebody, and that sort of came to till he died. Mm-hmm. So you see, that's why you see you have to be a bit of a lawyer when you talk to God. You see, if I hadn't said always, who knows? Even 1 year would have been enough. You have so we have a very delightful, very funny, delightful story about such things. Here was this Indian who had prayed and penanced and really mortified himself and done all the things that hard things you have to do before a wish can be granted. And so God appeared, the celestial being appeared before him and said, "Ask what you want." Of course, he only wanted worldly things. "Ask. Make one wish." Now, he has to make one wish. So he says, "May I rock my grandson in a golden cradle on the third floor of my house?" So if he's going to live long enough to have a grandson, also he's going to have grandsons and sons and grandsons. He's going to be rich enough to have a golden cradle. He's going to have a house with 3 stories that he's living. All in one sentence. No, what a waste. Ask only for that which he has, which only he has. Yeah. But also be a bit of a lawyer so that you get it in full. Get ask to love him. Ask to please him. Ask to serve him. But ask to be with him. That's all we wanted. I think that was my ambition since I was born. I was born with that ambition. I'm sure others were also were with Baba. But it is much longer in duration than a life. That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah. It's a promise of many lives.
Forever.
Yes. So what is time? As long as you're on that road, on the way to that. One day when I was being a little naughty, and when Baba said something to somebody, sure, I'll do it, you know, it'll be done. And I must have had a twinkle in my eye or some look in my eye, I don't know. And Baba looked at me, instead of saying, "Well, Baba said that now, but you know, I'm in a..."
Yeah.
Now. So Baba looks at me, I haven't said a thing. And I wasn't even obvious in what I was looking, but the thought went. Baba looks at me and says, "I am the only one who fulfills all promises." That's Nasma. It came, hit me. So I'm careful. And that's true. But when he is the only one who can fulfill, who does because he can fulfill all promises, what a pity to ask for anything less than himself. Then that question is, why is it that things that you don't like are good for you? And things that you like are not supposed to be good for you. ice cream and things. The spinach is good for you. The scolding is good for you. All these things are good for you, and that's not good for you. Of course, the best thing that's the best for you is what Baba gives. Each of us, each of you. And when he gives it visibly, tangibly, that's what we see. We knew how blessed we were. Now we know how much more blessed we were. And when Baba would give, whatever food he put into your plate, whatever he put into your hand, you never thought of the thing itself. This is from Baba, and you had to eat it. And sometimes, Baba could be tricky. Is there some silent thing between Baba and that particular person who was experiencing whatever he or she was experiencing? Of course, I'm talking only of the women. We don't know what the men had. So once when we were picnicking somewhere, or we had stopped somewhere on our blue bus travel, I remember Baba served food to each, as he would often do. And when it was my turn, Baba filled my plate with something I liked. But so much of it, there was a plate full of these potatoes and the biggest hunk of bread anybody else had had. And I said, my God, first I was saying, ah, lovely, my favorite potatoes and bread. I like that bread. But when it came so much, and I knew I had to eat it all because it's from Baba. Narina told me afterwards she never could understand how I finished it. She said, I was so fascinated, I kept looking at you. After a while, I had to divide it. I divided it into morsels, you know, and then got it into me like that countdown you all have for rockets and things, you see. 10, then it was 9, now it's only 8 left, now only 7, now 6, now, and just managed to swallow it till it was done. And she said, how did you do it? So, but then also we had treats, we had things we liked, which was not given in excess like that. For instance, like when Baba was serving food, if it was your favorite food, you each one go by him, past him, with a plate, while he put the food in your plate. And you knew from far what it was. Ah, that's my thing, you know. Today is a special thing. At that time, Baba would suddenly become very busy attending to something else, put a spoon in and put something on your plate. Oh, which was just a spoonful, you know. Wouldn't even do for a sparrow. And then the moment the next person comes along, he probably doesn't like it. He gets a splotch on that plate and things. But sometimes when he would give us treats, I don't know where he got them from. Chocolates, for instance, once in a while, or cheese. We never knew what happened with the men, on the men's side. But Baba would come over to the women's side, and sometimes he would have these treats. The chocolate, cheese. I'm talking about these two things because there's a reason behind it. And when Baba distributed to us, the servants were always included. Now, the servants are the women from the villages who had never eaten cheese, who probably never saw chocolate, and didn't care in the least for them. Not only didn't care, they had not acquired the taste at all, and for them it was a test, as it were. But then, if Baba gives it, of course you eat it. So I still remember how we would all stand around, we women, and quickly go and take the prasad from Baba, the piece of chocolate, hoping you'd get the biggest piece, or a little bigger than the others. And before you knew it, we had swallowed it. But then, when the servants came, they would take it with as much respect and love. True. And then, and then the same when Baba distributed a piece of cheese. It would make our mouths water. Cheese. We haven't seen cheese for a long time. So we took it with such joy. And then, of course, when we'd go into the kitchen now and then, we'd see a piece of chocolate lying on a shelf We see a piece of cheese being dried up on this other shelf. And we say, see, this is Baba's prasad. You have it? Yes, yes, I'll have it. Yes, yes, I'll have it. Because, you know, it wasn't a pleasure for them, except that it was given by Baba. So it was a great thing, and they would put it off as much as they could, and hoping maybe the mice would have some of it. And in the end, they would eat it. So, and that would make me think that really happiness is only when you have what you want. It is not attached to one particular thing. It's attached to you as to how much you're attached to this particular thing. So another thing, very rarely, once in a long while, we never asked why, we never tried to even think of it, but Baba has served a little wine to each of us. Where were we? I think it was Mara's birthday, Kevindavalali, but anyway, Baba gave us each port wine, and a couple of spoons, maybe a big tablespoon or a couple of tablespoons. And we were, of course, very happy. Oh, this is a treat. So, and especially from Baba's hand, wine, apart from liking it, what a significance. I still remember, next to me was standing Ramju's daughter, Jibu. Being a Muslim, she had never tasted wine. Anyway, in that family, it never was done. And she looked at it with such a face afterwards when Baba passed it around. And I said, God, drink it. And she made such a face. She said, how? I said, put it to your lips and drink it. She'd take it to her nostrils and say, oh. And I was hoping it wasn't Baba's prasad, so maybe she could give it to me. And I was, all right, pour it in my glass. But you couldn't do it. You couldn't swap what Baba had given. It was for you, and you have to have it. So in the end, I turned around, and I found her pinching her nose hard, taking the cup to her lips, in a gulp. And she swallowed it with a horrible face. But, and of course, Baba pretended that he didn't know, he hadn't seen. And when Baba's prasad is what we want, we not only love it, we want to accept it. And and it's very obvious. But when Baba's prasad is something that is bitter or not to our taste, then, of course, it's quite a different thing. And that's in all of our life itself. Oh, by Baba's grace, this lovely thing has happened. But we fail to say that by Baba's grace, this disaster has struck. Because what seems to us as disaster need not be that. We just as we don't recognize him in his disguise, we don't recognize his blessings in disguise. And sometimes it's hard. I said, Baba, can't you please send some plain garden or common blessing that you recognize at once and say, welcome, how do you do? I've been waiting for you, and shake his hand. You always have to, you know, find out later that, hey, that was a blessing. But she was in disguise, and so we didn't recognize her. But that's just the silent way. Talking of wine, I remember how when I was little, you would wonder how it was that I said I liked it when I was barely 14 when I joined Baba for good. And there was no such thing with Baba. As I said, this was years later as a rare treat, once in a while, when Baba would, with his own hands, give a little wine, pass around, and we're all together. So it's natural to wonder, how does Mani know that she likes it? Well, when I was little, I knew about wine in the sense that my father knew how to spice liquor in such a way that many Iranis would come to my father to have it done for them. So he would take the most the common native liquor, is like vodka. I was told that it even tastes like vodka. It's strong, earthy, common man's drink. But when that is taken, because Iranians like something more refined, That has taken an image. You put a lot of condiments and things like aniseed and raisins and nutmeg and all kinds of things. But you have to know the right proportion. You have to know where to keep it, in what temperature, and how long you keep it. And then it really is delicious. Now, my father would also specially make it when his brother came. That's my paternal uncle. He's about the only one of his family that I've seen, I've met. And so my father would do that, put in a wooden jar, because he knew his brother liked it. And so I would get a little bit of it. And then my mother's sister, that's my aunt, and her husband, that's my uncle, when they were in Loni, a very primitive village a few miles from Pune, and very lovely way of living, because she didn't try to change any of the villagers' ways.